Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Welcome back to another episode of Highly Conflicted for this week's Inside Track on Trump World. Donald Trump meanders on what to do about a second debate. America PAC now accounts for a larger part of Trump's ground game in battleground states. And Trump has been more interested in the micro drama in Washington than his own campaign. Last week, Vice President Harris said she had accepted an invitation from CNN for a second debate. This, of course, was not itself news, seeing as Harris called for a second debate immediately after the first one, and that was because Harris and her advisors saw how easy it was for them to get under Trump's skin and win. In fact, the entire Harris campaign went hard on the fact that she wanted a second debate, and Harris herself said in a tweet that she had gladly accepted CNN's invitation for a debate on October 23, while Brian Fallon and Jen O'Malley Dillon, the senior campaign advisors to Harris, all sent out statements that effectively were goading Trump into accepting a second debate. And quite predictably, Trump rejected the idea of another debate, insisting he had won the first one, all this rhetoric about how prize fighters don't call for a second fight immediately after they win, which was surely indicative of the fact that Harris had lost. And then he said the real reason he didn't want to do another debate was because voting had already started in some states, which was, of course, a bullshit excuse, because Trump himself previously pushed for a debate with NBC on September 25th, which would have been after the start of absentee ballots and early voting in some states. And in 2020, if you remember, the final debate was October 22. So having a CNN debate on October 23 would hardly have been the end of the world. And in 2016 and in 2020, Trump had a good time and was particularly interested in doing debates all the way through up to the election. So there's been a lot of public flapping from Trump saying no more debates, but privately, it's a much more complicated story. And privately, Trump has started asking questions of his advisors, again, whether he should do a second debate. And this is quite interesting. I'm hearing from multiple Trump advisors that they actually do want him to debate again, basically because they want a do-over. They're putting aside their egos and the embarrassment that came from the last debate, because, as I reported for TheGuardian.com and gave you guys the inside scoop in an earlier episode, Trump's advisors know that he lost and missed major opportunities in terms of trying to reframe the narrative against Harris when they faced off. That itself, I think, is an admission that the current abiding memory of Trump's debate performance is still of him ranting about Haitians eating pets. And that, of course, is far from ideal. And I think a lot of Trump's advisors know that Trump got kind of lucky that the fallout wasn't worse than it was. He got a few days of bad headlines about how it was a debate disaster and how he was ranting and raving from everything about pets to immigrants to saying he knew it was true because he watched it on TV and TV had said that the Haitians were eating pets. And then the conversation turned to him eating geese. But then it got overtaken by the far-right conspiracist Laura Loomer traveling with him on his plane on 9/11. And then J.D. Vance got pulled into defending the bomb threats in Springfield, Ohio, as a result of the Haitian immigrant claims. And then the second assassination attempt washed away all of that crazy news cycle of that week. And Trump effectively got off without having to be accountable for the objectively bad debate performance. Now, I'm told for his part, Trump is still unenthusiastic about a second debate, but for a range of other reasons, and it's mainly personal grievance. Number one, he's still stewing about what he thinks was particularly unfair treatment from the ABC moderators, and especially David Muir, the anchor of ABC World News Tonight. He has continued to complain in the weeks since that debate performance to aides, to advisors, and to allies that they fact-checked him, but they didn't fact-check Harris. Of course, overlooking the part that Harris, in general, doesn't lie and make up false claims at the rate and abandon that Trump does. But Trump's also complaining effectively about how unfair it was that he beat Joe Biden in the first debate and that should be all he has to do, that he shouldn't have to go back and debate Harris once or twice or more, and how much he is still wishing he could run in the race that he wants against Biden rather than the race that he's currently in. And this has been actually a theme inside Trump world for several weeks now, since the debate performance went down and since Biden obviously exited the race. And there's not very much that the Trump advisors can do. There's not very much that they know what to do. This is Trump having his own personal grievances, and there's no real way to snap him out of it other than to get him refocused on a different issue. And then third of all, Trump continues to be upset about what he saw as particularly wounding criticism on Fox News in the post-debate coverage from Bret Baier and Brett Hume, who said in the post-game outright that Trump lost the debate and he had a bad night, he was rattled, and that Harris got under his skin. But all of that having been said, he's now contemplating whether or not he should go back into the ring and square off with Harris again. And the one thing that I keep hearing, this kind of measurable optimism from the advisors who want him to debate again, is, will Trump be able to countenance J.D. Vance having the last word on a debate stage before Election Day? And whether Trump will want to make himself the grand finale? Next week, of course, J.D. Vance faces off against Tim Walz, the running mate for Vice President Harris. That will be a big moment for the campaign and will be a big moment for Trump. Trump, after all, selected Vance because, among other things, he was good on adversarial TV, and he was an attack dog that Trump could deploy. And there is this sense now that if Trump might have faltered against Harris, then maybe JD could reset that narrative and show himself to be more competent, or at least more competent than Tim Walz. And that will be the abiding memory of the Trump campaign among undecided voters heading into the final stretch of the election cycle. All of Trump's annoyance, at any rate, is coming on the back of the campaign finding itself in its own predicament of clawing back the slim advantage Harris has in the polls. Looking at the New York Times Siena polls this week, Trump is ahead by 1 or 2 points in Arizona, North Carolina, and Georgia, but Harris is ahead by 2 or 3 points in several other crucial battleground states, including must-win Pennsylvania. And that's must-win for both of them because it basically holds the key to as many paths to 270 electoral college votes more than anything, more than any other state, more than anything else. And the Trump campaign has recognized that. And in private conversations, they really are looking at Pennsylvania as the state that they need to win. And their discussions with me also go along the lines of whoever wins Pennsylvania wins the election. Well, that's all well and good that they have identified Pennsylvania as the state that they need to win. But what they haven't really wrapped their heads around still, I think, is how in close elections, turnout is likely to have an outsized impact because the margins of victory in these states will be very, very small. That's not to say they're not focused at all on the ground game situation, on their field operation. They most certainly are. They have their own new model that they're gambling on, where they will have what they call Trump Force 47 captains. Essentially, ardent Trump supporters go out and knock on doors of neighbors. The program incentivizes them to knock on more doors and reach more likely Trump voters through a loyalty-esque perks tier scheme, where they get merchandise like MAGA hats and expedited entry into rallies if the more people they sign up, kind of like if you refer people to a newsletter. And they also have, of course, outsourced everything else to a number of super PACs, or that's at least what they thought they were going to do. I have new reporting in The Guardian this week that the larger Trump ground game operation, the unglamorous but critical work of knocking on doors and canvassing likely Trump voters, is actually now outsourced to one PAC. And that's the Elon Musk-backed America PAC. The Trump campaign's gamble with the field operation has been something of a mystery to a lot of people because it's never really been done by a Republican candidate before. And it's confusing sometimes from people from the outside looking in because you have the what we call the carpet bombing of the likely Trump voters in all of these battleground states, effectively trying to get them to make a plan of vote. You go up to their house, you knock on a door, you identify the target person you're trying to reach and be like, hey, have you made a plan to vote this election? So that's what the mass carpet bombing is. But the Trump campaign has been at pains to point out that their focus this cycle is reaching on what they call low propensity rural voters. Low propensity voters, because these are people who, if they did cast a ballot, would cast a ballot for Trump, but historically have not returned a ballot in a presidential election. But while the Trump campaign once predicted having multiple PACs doing get-out-the-vote work, with 6 weeks until the election, only America PAC has a material presence in every battleground state. America PAC, according to numbers relayed to us by people with direct access to the data, has about 300 to 400 people ballpark in every state walking every day. That's the kind of lingo we'd use, people who are knocking on doors every day. And the reason we're looking at this number now, people who are walking, is because what we traditionally refer to as paid and unpaid staffers plus volunteers are being interpreted in different ways by different groups and different entities. The Trump campaign sees it in one way. The RNC used to see it in a different way. Other PACs like Turning Point USA, Turning Point Action, run by the right-wing activist Charlie Kirk, see it in a different way. And so I think it makes more sense to talk about it in terms of how many people are knocking on doors every day. And in that metric, America PAC stands alone, and they stand far apart from every other PAC. Like I said, presence in every battleground state. And crucially, they want to do three passes of likely Trump voters in all of these states. That's a really big tall endeavor. If you think about it, you know, for instance, in the state of Nevada, you're probably looking at having to do 30,000 doors a day, knocking on 30,000 doors a day. And they are actually on track for this. They have already completed one pass. They've got two more passes to do between now and election day, and they do seem on track for that. So America PAC now accounting for a large part of the Trump Get Out the Vote program. But since the Trump campaign doesn't have its own mass field operation, it's busy doing its Trump 47 program and its volunteers, the campaign actually has little backup if America PAC hits any further snags. For instance, last week, the company that they had retained for Arizona and Nevada to do knoll knocking and canvassing got let go. It was called the September Group LLC, and they were let go for performance-related issues. The move to terminate that vendor, though, had damaging consequences because America Pack, first of all, lost several days of canvassing while they busy trying to find a replacement. And in doing so, they lost at least some of the 300 people that the September Group had hired in Arizona and Nevada to do field work. You have to think about it from the perspective of some of these canvassers, right? They're short-term contracts. There's not long until the election. Some of them might wait around to see if they get picked up by the successor vendor to September Group, but many of them will not and have not. They decided to go and work for other campaigns. They swapped back to another entity that was doing paid canvassing. And so the 300 people, the roughly 300 people that America Pack had in its army through the September Group were lost. The Trump campaign denied to us that they had a reliance on America Pack in any way. And you know, they like to talk about how they have more than 27,000 volunteers working as Trump 47 captains. But that number isn't quite as large or as meaningful as you might think. You see, there are tiers to the Trump 47 program, like I explained. And at the top end of the tier, it basically involves volunteers going out and hitting 100 likely voters. And 45 of them have to be direct voter contacts where you knock on doors and actually canvass those people. Even if every one of the 27,000 volunteers hit 45 doors, that would get them to about 1.2 million doors. And you've got to remember that the Trump 47 program is nationwide. So 1.2 million doors nationwide is not actually a particularly big number at all. The scope and the reach is actually quite small. If you think about it, 1.2 million doors is roughly what America Pack is intending to hit in the state of Nevada alone. So that kind of puts you in perspective of the extent of the reach of these Trump 47 captains. Now, the one thing going for the Trump 47 captains program is the people who are recruited are particularly ardent Trump supporters. They are likely to have a high conversion rate of people they talk to actually requesting a ballot and then actually returning it. So that is the one thing that is going for them. But in terms of the numbers, it's not particularly large. Also, the Trump campaign and PACs like Turning Point like to talk about how they're targeting these low propensity voters in these rural areas. And the one stat that we hear over and over again is that, for instance, in Paul Gosar's, Representative Paul Gosar's district, turnout has not been particularly high historically. And if they could reach the 30-40% of voters who didn't vote, that would be significant. That district is ruby red, very, very Trumpy. And their aim is to get as many of those people to return a ballot as possible this cycle around. In theory, it's a good idea, right? If you can maximize turnout, then if you can get 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 more votes in a small area where it's like low-hanging fruit, that's a smart theory. But it's a theory, right? There is diminishing marginal returns with this stuff. You're never going to get to 100% voter turnout. It's like this is the reason why even in Switzerland, which has particularly high turnout rates for referendums, for instance, because they do it by canton, you never really get more than 70%. And so you do max out. And so it's all well and good for the Trump campaign to say, hey, we're targeting low propensity voters in these areas where we know they're definitely going to vote Trump if they return a ballot. The point is, you're probably not going to reach all those people. And even if you did, the likelihood of them all turning out is actually quite small. And then there's the more interesting, wider point about the America Pack having an outsized role or an outsized proportion of the Trump ground game, which is if Trump wins the election, even in part based on America Pack's work, Elon Musk, who backs that group, has articulated a lot of political ambitions. And resultingly, if Trump wins, Musk would probably have a larger influence in that second administration. You have to remember that Musk increasingly has been very vocal about his support for Trump. He did the X Spaces with Trump, where he talked about, you know, potentially chairing a committee or like a small business or like a large business entrepreneurs committee. Trump seemed open to that idea, and then Musk has since gone further and kind of floated the idea of a cabinet position, and Trump didn't shoot that down. And so there is a developing bromance between these two guys, and it seems logical that if Elon helps Trump win, and even in small part, that Trump would feel inclined to reward him potentially with a plum position in a second Trump administration. But for Trump, that's all been in the background. Trump has spent recent days much more fixated on a series of micro-dramas consuming the political and media elite than his actual campaign, which kind of tells you the kind of guy that Trump is. And it's kind of an interesting window into his world. In particular, he's been concerned about not getting dragged into the very messy saga surrounding Mark Robinson, who he endorsed to be the North Carolina governor, but has since been exposed as having called himself a, quote, black Nazi on a porn forum, among other things, according to this explosive report from CNN. Trump has privately told allies that he will never comment on Robinson now, and he has successfully avoided the topic, both at his recent North Carolina rally and also at a press conference in New York at Trump Tower. He was asked point blank range if he would weigh in, and he said, "I don't know about that situation," and demurred. It's interesting that his pollsters believe Trump actually might benefit politically from a split ticket in North Carolina, in part because voters there tend to see Trump as his own entity. But Trump is concerned about the Mark Robinson situation, not least because the Harris campaign recently cut this ad that tied him to Mark Robinson and effectively compared the two and said, hey, you know, the Republican Party is clearly upset about one candidate who has made problematic comments online. Funny that they're not making the same sort of comments and concerns about the other candidate, i.e. Trump, with his kind of vulgar and often coarse remarks towards women that are sometimes racist, that are charged in nature. And so Trump doesn't want to get involved in the messiness of that, but he is obviously preoccupied by it. And he is obviously more preoccupied by another messy situation that has consumed Washington, which is the mini drama about RFK Jr., who is now a Trump surrogate, sexting with New York Mag reporter Olivia Nuzzi. The way Trump found out about this was on the night that Oliver Darcy broke the story on Status, his Substack newsletter. And Trump was getting ready to leave a rally. And from what I was told, Trump effectively got back on his plane and was handed a printed out version of this story ready to go. And that was the first time he learned about it. He learned about it almost instantaneously. And he's not really been able to let it go since. He has called people asking if they know if it was true. He has called people asking if the sexting was anything more than that. He is like in many ways, Trump's like a teen girl who just wants the gossip about other people's private and romantic lives. This has always been him, and it was on show for the past week. My colleague on the beat, Tara Palmieri at Puck, reported that he even caught up RFK Jr. himself to see if he would weigh in. We're told that RFK has been insistent that he has only met Olivia Nuzzi once and nothing untoward happened. But there's also history with Trump and Olivia. You know, Olivia has been on the beat for some time. She has done multiple interviews of Trump, most recently at Mar-a-Lago, when she did an interview about him and his ear in the wake of the first assassination attempt. And I'm told that after Olivia left, Trump made a comment about her physical appearance, which kind of shows, you know, which I think shows the level of interest Trump has in this story. He's got two people he knows fairly well. Number one, Olivia, and number two, RFK, who he even gave a shout out to at his rally in Michigan, saying, look, we're RFK, where are you? And clearly it's been on his mind for the entire week. Anyway, that's it for Highly Conflicted with me, Hugo Lowell. See you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelthy providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelthy can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.